How's it going, everyone? Pat Loika here. You're listening to Loika Mania, episode 30. It's a very special show this week because I will have a special guest. Today I'm joined by Hulk artist Gabriel Hardman. Mr. Hardman has worked on, among other things, the Agents of Atlas books for Marvel, and he has done some storyboard and concept work for various Hollywood films, including Inception, X2, Superman Returns, and many others. And we'll be talking for about an hour about just the comics industry, how he got in, and all kinds of fun stuff about storyboarding. And, you know, we tried to go through as much of his career as we could. It was a really good time. It was probably my first real, full-length interview with someone. And I do have to admit, I still have a lot to learn doing it, but I really enjoyed it, and I think I did pretty good for this one. So I hope you enjoy it. I'm happy to cut this short here and get you right to the interview because I didn't want the podcast to go for way too long. I did want to say you guys should pick up FF number 1, which came out last week because it was fantastic, among other things. And yeah, that's it. Hope you guys enjoyed the interview, and I will see you next week. We're back. Right now I am joined by an esteemed guest. He is currently the artist on Hulk, and he has worked on storyboarding various films like Inception by Christopher Nolan. He is none other than Gabriel Hardman. Welcome, Gabe.
Hey, thanks, Pat.
So you've been working in this business for quite a while now, and I've followed some of your work. Like, when you resurfaced as Gabriel Hardman, I've been following your work. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know that you had a secret past that you've been working on comics for since the early 90s, which I thought was really surprising.
Yeah, well, I mean, I worked in comics from probably 94 to 96, really. I mean, or it was from 93 to 96, but the first book came out in 94. And then nothing again, nothing after that until, 2007 or something. I mean, it was all, I was only a storyboard artist for many years after that. And had always been itching to get back into comics. And just couldn't quite figure out a way to do it before. But
You said you started around 93. That was like right in the middle of the big boom period. That was before the glut. How was it back then, just breaking in at that time?
I think it was probably a lot easier to break in back then. It's not like I've had really a problem breaking in this time. I think that there were just lots more jobs. There were so many more books being published that just your likelihood of going to one of the bigger cons and showing your portfolio around and getting some work was much, much higher. I got my first job. I think I was still 17 or I just turned 18 when I got my first job at Marvel, which was my first proper like published work, on War Machine. But I had already by that time, for maybe 3 years, I'd been doing samples and sending them to the companies constantly. I'd been going to cons. I graduated from high school when I was like 16, and I moved up to New York. Ostensibly it was to go to School of Visual Arts, actually for fine art. Which I only had enough money, like some scholarship money, from my, my high school in Florida. I had enough scholarship money to go for one semester and I had to drop out. Although it wasn't going very well anyway, so it wasn't really that big of a problem. And the entire time I'd been like consistently working on samples, sending them to the different companies, like getting feedback from at least from the the editors who were the submission editors, and just pushing and pushing and pushing. And then when I moved to New York, I started going to the old show at the Javits Center, and actually it was there meeting up with somebody there was how I got my first job, how I got that War Machine job.
Really? I didn't even know they were – I didn't know that they had conventions out, you know, back there, you know, back then.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. There was a guy who I can't remember the name of now, but he was sort of a convention impresario guy in the mid-90s where he, you know, he had multiple cons that, you know, at different places around the country. And the New York one was one of the bigger ones. It was no – you know, the scale of it was nothing like the New York con now, but it was still a relatively – big show, and it was good. You know, there were lots of editors there because it's New York.
Yeah, it's New York, and that's where they all are. You know,
I mean, the very first interaction I had. Sorry, I don't want to digress too much, but the very first interaction I had with real comics was I had my mother through somebody she played tennis with or something like that, knew this guy, Irwin Hazen, who was a Golden Age artist.
Yes.
He had like been the artist on Wildcat and, you know, and then like drew the comic strip Dondi later. And I went and I showed him my portfolio when I was 16, but it was before I moved to New York. Mm-hmm. And I showed him my portfolio and I was visiting New York and he was like, well, this stuff is pretty good. I'm going to give my friend Joe Orlando a call. Joe Orlando was, I believe was the art director at DC at the time.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so he like gave him a call. It was like, hey, I got this kid that I'd like you to, see. And, you know, set up an appointment. Like the next day I went up to DC, like when they were in the 666 building, the 666, you know, Fifth Avenue, I think. Uh-huh. And like met with Joe Orlando and showed him my stuff. And he was basically like, you know what, kid, you're not ready, you know? And, he was cool about it. You know, I mean, it was, you know, it was certainly sort of intimidating to be 16 and going in there and showing your portfolio. But it was, you know, it was a good experience in that, you know, I had to do it and had to be, you know, had to try to be professional and, you know, but from then I kind of redoubled my efforts for just doing samples and sending them and, started getting a lot of notes back from the guy, the submissions editor at DC, Neil Posner, who has since passed away. But he was a very gruff guy. He was not a pleasant guy, but still it was very cool that he would respond to everything and send me detailed notes on my submissions and all that. And then, let me know if this is getting too boring. Sorry.
No, this is good.
But, then I ended up, getting a call from right after I dropped out of School of Visual Arts, I got a call from Dick Giordano's office, and he was like putting together like a group of people that, you know, he was just about to resign as executive editor to retire at DC, and he was like going to do a sort of you know, a little new talent program where he'd bring people in like, you know, once a week and, you know, review their the work that they'd done and kind of assign them a script to draw and you know, and, you know, then you'd make revisions and bring them back to Dick. And then theoretically he would go show them around to the editors who would then give you a job. So I did that. I got along really well with him. It was a great experience. It was, you know, it was very insightful. You know, him reviewing my portfolio each week and I got paid a little bit of money for it. Which was awesome. And then no editors were interested. Like, I don't know if it was just because, you know, I mean, they didn't think the work was good enough or they didn't, or because, Dick was on his way out and they didn't feel like they owed him, you know, giving some kid a job or whatever. But, that lingered along and he was like, hey, I don't know what to tell you. You know, there's nobody's really biting. And so right around then, one of those New York cons, was coming up. So I went around and just really, like, I showed all those samples that I'd worked on with Dick, you know, to everybody I could find there, and ended up actually just a guy standing around next to one of the editors was this guy, Len Kaminsky, who wrote He wrote Iron Man.
Yeah, and he wrote Morbius and a few other things. I remember.
Yeah. And he was like, hey, those are pretty good. Our artist just bailed on us for this War Machine comic. You should go up and talk to Neil Yamtov on Monday and see if you can get the job. You know, so he gave them my name, and I went up there and I met with them, and I did. I went home that night and did one sort of pinup piece of War Machine to show that I could do it. And came back the next day, and they just gave me the job. And you know, the previous artist had done, and I don't know if I should say who it was or not. I mean, it probably doesn't matter anymore. But the previous artist had kind of bailed to go work at DC, and he'd done maybe 10 pages of it. And the bad thing about it was that they were like, we want you to just basically redraw his first 10 pages, you know? So it kind of looked like I don't know. I felt bad about that, you know, but especially when that said artist came up to me at San Diego Comic-Con and gave me shit about it in a not so friendly way. But I was like, hey, that's what they told me to do. But anyway, yeah. And so I drew War Machine for like 8 issues, and I believe it was 8 issues, and none of it's very good. And you know, I mean, I was young, and I, you know, and the inker who was assigned to me was really not appropriate for my stuff, and she really mangled everything. It's this woman, Pam Eklund. I mean, it wasn't like she was a bad inker. She just was not.
Was not appropriate for your style.
Yeah. Basically. You know, that's just the way this stuff goes, you know? But she got along very well with the editor, and I didn't get along with the editor that well. And I was also a stupid, you know, teenager, basically, you know, I was not that professional. So I ended up, getting being at odds with the editor and more or less getting fired from the book. So I did that, and then I did some, and after that I managed to get some work from Malibu, which was actually a really good experience, and did that for like a year, and the Ultraverse stuff that they published at the time, and from there ended up in working in movies. I'd moved out to Los Angeles and sort of fell into doing storyboards and movies, and and I was lucky because that was right as the comic market, like 1996, it just totally imploded, you know?
Yeah, and that's when it just fell apart for the industry.
Yep. Yeah. And so things were looking really bad, you know, Marvel was going into bankruptcy and all that sort of stuff was happening. And I just kind of stumbled into meeting a guy who was an agent who represented storyboard artists, and he started getting me work as a storyboard artist, and I just started doing that and becoming more successful with it, and just never had the time to do any more comics for quite a while because I was, you know, making a decent living and working on these movies, you know.
Oh, yeah. And I mean the storyboarding. I mean, I was looking at your IMDb page, and you've been working on there's quite a lot of big time movies in there. So you know, it's not like you've been working on direct to videos or anything like that.
No.
It looked like your very first movie was Austin Powers.
Yeah,
which is still a good movie, which is still funny. Now that the Austin Powers jokes have kind of run their course.
Yeah, I would I would hope so. I mean, it's I actually haven't seen the movie in years and years. I mean, it's cool that it was that the movie turned into something, because really it was it was like a very small $16 million non-union movie when I started on it. I mean, that's why they gave me the job, being a first-time storyboard artist. And but luckily, you know, it sort of became something, you know, something kind of more than that. I mean, it could have been, you know, the equivalent to, you know, any number of other tiny movies that come out and nobody ever sees. But Mike Myers' career had been on the downswing before that, and this kind of rejuvenated it for him. And, and working on that, I got other jobs from that. Although a lot of my early stuff was comedies, which, was kind of a mixed bag. I mean, I'm you know, I have a sensibility that'll work for that. But, you know, but certainly at the time, I really wanted to work on, you know, action movies and wanted to work on, you know, things that were, you know, that were a little more appropriate for my skill set. But that was a really good way to break in, though. I mean, it was totally dumb luck, you know. I mean, it was totally dumb luck that I ended up doing that movie. And very soon after that, I was doing, you know, much higher level movies, you know, much bigger movies, even if a lot of them were bad, but they were still big movies, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I did notice that, your style is not style I would associate for, like, you know, storyboarding a comedy movie. You know, your style really lends itself more to, like, say, like, crime movies or action movies and that sort of thing.
Right.
You kind of do have some of that here, but I do find it funny that as I was going for your IMDb, you seem to be tied to Mike Myers from
Well, that's just because I'm loyal, you know? I mean, I worked really closely with Mike and Jay Roach on the first Austin Powers movie. I mean, I would go over to his house and, you know, we'd sit around and, like, you know, everybody would just sort of bullshit stuff. And, and it was, you know, I've always had, personally with Mike, a very good experience. I mean, he's always personally treated me well. And so, I did all the Austin Powers movies, and then, you know, there was stuff like Cat in the Hat, which is like, it was obvious that it was going to not be good. But at the same time, I had known, you know, I knew Mike, and I also had known the director and everyone who worked in the art department because, from working on different previous movies with him. Mm-hmm. So it was like I knew everyone involved. It was the easiest show I've ever done. I mean, and it was, you know, it's like, it's probably one of the worst movies I've worked on, yet it, the experience of actually working on the movie was actually really good. You know, a lot of the times it works that way where it may not be the best movie in the world, but that doesn't have a lot to do with going in every day and the people that you deal with and all that sort of stuff. So, I have been associated with Mike Myers. I probably won't be doing any more Mike Myers movies after after The Love Guru, after my 3 weeks of work on The Love Guru, which was pretty bad. You know, I mean, I think anyone who was associated with The Love Guru will tell you that it was a pretty bad experience on every front. So.
Really? I don't see it in your credits. I didn't think you were. I thought you had.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't really work on The Love Guru. It's not in there because I never put it in there. But I only worked on it for 3 weeks, and, you know, that's all I agreed to do. And it was in Toronto, and Toronto's beautiful, but I don't like to be on location. I'd prefer to be at home. There's certainly movies that I've worked on that are not on that IMDb page, if I can help it. Sometimes they get on there anyway, and I, you know, and then it's impossible to get them off. But
I've always wondered, though. I mean, you mentioned being on location, and how often is it that, you know, that storyboard artist would be required to be on location? Because I always thought that, you know, storyboard artists would basically just work on the script, you know, from wherever they are, and then that's it. I didn't realize that they had to come along, you know, for the entire production.
Yeah, it's just it just really depends on the situation. I mean, oftentimes I've been just heavily involved with the development of the sequences and of, I've ended up on many, many occasions having a lot of input into, you know, into what actually happens in the action sequences and the content of these things, which is often not developed in the script, but developed in the storyboards. So you end up working very closely with the director and, you know, and often end up, you know, going to wherever they actually film the movie because they're basically just moving the entire production there. You very rarely actually get to work from home on a feature because they want you there and they want you to be available. And, it's a, you know, it's a very, you know, it's an intense business where the expectation is that at any moment you're going to be available and you're going to have everything done that the director wants to see right at that moment, you know? So, you know, it's very stressful and it's very intense and it's, and you end up, and so on several movies I've ended up going on location. I'm not even several because the first couple that I went for long periods of time, I ended up hating it, you know? I mean, it's like I'm the only American who hates Dublin, Ireland, just because I'm there for 6 months, and it's difficult to be, to be stuck someplace where you have to do a huge job, and you have to move into some apartment and have to, like, get your laundry done and have to deal with all the other things in life at the same time as you're in some other country and trying to get your work on the movie.
Which movie did you have to move to Dublin for?
I don't know.
Okay.
It's Reign of Fire.
Oh, okay.
It's the dragon movie with Christian Bale
and Matthew McConaughey. Yeah. That was a fun movie.
It had
it had its moments.
I worked on it for a long time and it was, never quite managed to be what it could have been, but I don't know that it could have been much anyway. It was always going to be kind of a dopey dragon movie, you know.
It was
a good paycheck. I worked on it for almost a year, you know.
Oh, wow. That was a long time.
Yeah. You know,
No wonder it kind of became a miserable experience at that point.
Well, it's tough. I mean, I wasn't in Dublin for that whole time. I was in Dublin for about 6 months.
But it's still quite a long time.
It's a long time. And I never went home. I never had the time to come home for a visit or anything. So I was just in Dublin I went over to London on the weekends a lot, you know, just to do stuff.
Wow.
And which was great, you know, but it's a long, long time to be away from home and be, just.
A lot can happen in 6 months, especially if you're away from home, you know.
I don't
think I can even handle that. I mean, I could barely handle being away from home for a week during a convention, for example.
Right. Well, yeah. No, I mean, I at this point, I feel the same way, you know. I mean, I've basically turned down every movie that would involve a location thing. The last time I did a location thing was that couple weeks on The Love Guru, and I've basically just turned down everything else. But I've been turning down a lot of movies lately because I've been focused more on comics and I've just been very selective about the movies I've been taking.
Yeah, I noticed you've worked on a lot of comic movies.
Yes,
and particularly, like, as far as the good ones go, you worked on X-Men 2, and you worked with
Brian Singer. That's it. Oh, wait.
That's the best one.
As far as the good ones go. There's X-Men 2. Yes, I worked with Brian a couple of times on that and Superman.
Yeah. And you've worked on the movies and you've worked in comics. I always wondered what you thought of working in both industries. Like, what kind of makes working in comics better than – because you mentioned you've been yearning to go back to comics for a while when you're in the middle of the storyboarding thing. I always wonder what is it about the comics that you prefer – the industry that you prefer more over, say, working in storyboarding.
Well, what I prefer about the work in comics is that it's your work is what people are seeing, you know?
Yes.
You're producing the thing that you're producing the final product. Mm-hmm. And – the decisions you make are what the readers see, what the audience sees. I mean, in doing storyboards or doing concept work, you're getting paid good money, and you're in demand and all that sort of stuff. But no one ever sees the work that you do. Everything you're doing is pre-production work on some level, and it's not that satisfying in certain ways. It just isn't. I mean, you're not personally responsible for the end product. Even if, and there are situations where I've had a lot to do with the developing of specific sequences, and there a lot of me is up on the screen because I've made a lot of those decisions about the shots and the action sequences, but it's still no one knows that, and still you don't really get any credit for it, and you get your name at the end of the movie, but it's just not there's a real I there I mean, everybody talks about the difference between the difference in money between comics and movies, but it's really, I mean, this is your whole career and this is your life. So it's really important to me to be doing work that I think matters, you know, and to be doing work that, that no one else could be doing. I mean, maybe, you know, I mean, I'm one of the bigger storyboard guys, but when it comes down to it, somebody else could have storyboarded that movie and you probably, for the most part, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference. But, you know, if somebody else drew an issue of Agents of Atlas, you could definitely tell the difference. That's somebody else's work, you know?
Exactly.
So, I think that it's really important to be able to have, to have work out in the world that you can point at and say that, you know, I did that, you know?
That makes a lot of sense, and I could totally see why what's great about comics, and also you're not limited by budgets or anything like that.
Right.
Now, as far as your thought process goes, though, when you're working on doing the actual, when you're putting down the art, what's the advantages for either field? I mean, I know in film, you're basically drawing what the script has. And whereas in comics, you can kind of do improv on what's on the script.
I would say that that's not entirely true. I mean, there are more times than not in movies, I'm not even working off of a script, or if I am working from the script, it's in the loosest possible way. Most of the time, the reason they're hiring me in movies is because they know that their action sequences may be weak or may not be that well thought out, and they're saying, "Here, take a shot at this, and try to come up with good stuff." So, I mean, in a lot of ways, there's more freedom to invent things working in movies for me than there has been doing freelance comics, I'm lucky to work with Jeff Parker, who we get along really well and we have a really good working relationship, but still the basic way that comics are set up now, as opposed to in the 90s, is a very tightly scripted way. And so there's actually quite a bit less, there's less creativity on the part of the artist as far as the story is concerned, and less so than there was in the 90s when a script that I would get would just be a plot, and there would be a couple of lines. Wow. There'd be a couple of maybe a paragraph that just describes everything that happens on an individual page.
So you were still doing Marvel style back in the 90s then?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Wow. I didn't know they were still doing that back then.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Wow,
it was, at that point, I think that it was really just, the perceived, the perception that artists had too much input from the image era, mm-hmm. that those guys were ignoring the scripts and doing whatever they wanted to. And I'm kind of talking bullshit here because I don't exactly know. I just assume that this is what's happened because I was in it back then, mm-hmm. and then I've come back to it now. But it seems to me that there's a sort of reaction now, where the feeling is that the scripts need to be very, very tight, before they're given to the artists, which I don't necessarily think is a good thing. I mean, I think that, that kind of, I don't necessarily think they should be freewheeling in the way that they were a long time ago, where it was a really vague plot that, the artist just does whatever with, because obviously different artists have different levels of taste and storytelling ability and everything else. But I do feel like there's a certain restrictiveness in the current way that it's done, because I think that you're sort of, stifling, a kind of creative spark that was there, for older guys, for Jack Kirby's and the like, who were able to bring a lot to things that I think under these circumstances, they wouldn't be able to. Like I say, this isn't necessarily a reflection of my experience so far, because I've just been working with Parker and we get along and it's great. But yeah, you guys
can kind of shoot ideas with each other and you can always change stuff on the fly because, you know, you guys get along really well.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, not everyone have that kind of working relationship with the writer they're working with. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But yeah, so to answer your question, there is, well, actually, I think I already answered the question. Sorry.
you did a really good job answering it, so you're good. So before we kind of move past the film stuff, I mean, you've done a lot of sequences in films. Like, what's your favorite thing when you saw it on the screen and you realized how, you know, how well it turned out? What sequence or what movie you think did best?
I think that it probably is the Superman return sequence, where he saves the plane. It's just that I don't like the movie, you know? I mean, I'm happy with how the sequence plays in the movie, but I wasn't happy with everything else in the movie. So and that was the primary thing I worked on. I worked on that for, well, which I've talked about before, but I worked on it, early on in the process of, when there really wasn't a script and then I did some more stuff on the movie, but then they wanted to go to Australia, or they were going to Australia, to produce the rest of the movie for another year. And I just, I didn't want to go be on the other side of the world and, you know, for a year, even though I'm sure Australia is beautiful. I just didn't want to go. So I backed off and, did some other movie. And when I saw the movie, they kept absolutely everything intact that I had done in that sequence. But I didn't feel like the rest of the movie lived up to the potential that it seemed like it had at the very beginning when Bryan Singer was pitching it to me.
Yeah, that was unfortunate. I mean, that movie had one of the best teaser trailers ever, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
That was such a great teaser. And then when you got to the actual final movie, I was just wondering what happened to that. What happened? I thought the trailer was better. Although that,
yeah,
the plane sequence was fantastic, though.
Oh, well, thanks. I mean, but I feel like it was. I just feel like, when you make a movie in a very sort of disorganized, chaotic way, mm-hmm. which X-Men 2 was made that way as well. There's a chance that it can all come together and just sort of magically work. Mm-hmm. And there's a chance that it's going to fall flat, you know? And I think that for the most part, it came together and worked in X-Men 2, and it was resonant, and it had the elements it needed to have. And then in Superman, I think it was just a souffle that fell flat. You know, it just, the elements didn't come together. It wasn't, it didn't have the sort of sense of wonder that it sort of needed to have to be a sequel to the Richard Donner movie. It doesn't always work out, you know?
Yeah, there's a sequence there that when I thought that movie just went bad when I saw a bunch of thugs and Cal Penn beating the hell out of Superman. I was like, no, that ain't right.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah.
You don't do that.
Yeah.
So you eventually, you made your way back to comics, and during the time when you were just concentrating on film, were you keeping up with what was going on in comics, or was there?
Oh, yeah. Bigger? I mean, I went to the comic store every week, and, you know, for the entire time, you know, so, although I didn't, you know, I wouldn't always, you know, keep up with everything that was actually going on. I mean, I would go, I would buy stuff. I'd buy stuff that I liked or that looked good, and I'd follow certain books. Mm-hmm. But I didn't really read a broad spectrum of books. I certainly didn't read a lot of Marvel and DC books. I would just pick up what I was sort of interested in.
That's cool. I mean, were there books that were coming out back then that you kind of wish, man, I got to do that, but I'm busy doing this, or?
I don't know if there were specific books that I feel like I missed out on. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I would have liked to have drawn an arc of Queen and Country, mm-hmm. you know? I would have liked to, I mean, I'm sure that there's other stuff, but, you know, there's certainly, there's certainly characters that I would like to do freelance wise that who knows if I'll have the chance to, because, you know, other times things, you know, the market could bear, you know, more low level, you know, C grade characters, which are most of the ones that I like. So, and
they're the most fun, you know, they, yeah. they are a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, no, I mean, but right now, you know, you couldn't, I don't think that, the market can handle a question book, and it certainly obviously can't handle a Doom Patrol book. So, you know, that one just got canceled.
Yeah. They just relaunched Doom Patrol for like the third time before it got canceled. So
yeah, it's
really sad.
It's been many, many times. I mean, I think, and I have every single time I'm a huge fan of the 60s Doom Patrol. Mm-hmm. And I really liked the Grant Morrison Doom Patrol too.
Oh yeah.
I've picked up the first couple of issues of every attempt they've made at relaunching the Doom Patrol, and I've never liked any of them. I mean, nothing against the creators, because everybody has their own take and they're trying to make it work for the current publishing environment. But I just feel like it's never quite worked again.
I'm just thinking about it. I think you and Parker would make a great team on Doom Patrol. Maybe one of these days.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've talked about that, you know. I mean, certainly. I think both of us would love to do that.
It would certainly fit his sensibilities. I think your style could kind of add something different to it. Or maybe, I don't know, if that's the type of book that you would change a style for. Because I've seen your work, and you've mostly done your own inks. And when I saw the recent Hulk 30.1 that Tom Palmer had inked for you, it kind of had your work kind of had a different look to it. And I thought, wow, this is very, it's a very interesting look. And I think...
Well, that was also, it was, for the most part, it was breakdowns, mm-hmm. not pencils, mm-hmm. so that he was inking. So it's a lot more of Tom interpreting the stuff, mm-hmm. which was very cool. The only real reason I agreed to do it was because I'm a huge fan of Tom Palmer. I'm a huge fan of of his inking Gene Colan on Tomb of Dracula. And I just thought it would be cool to work with him, you know. But for the most part, that's probably the only reason that I would let somebody else ink me. But as I talked about before, I had a lot of bad experiences with inkers, in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And I basically just vowed that it was only going to be me inking this stuff. I make exceptions for circumstances where I can be a fan and work with somebody that I really admire. You know, I mean, hopefully Bill Sienkiewicz could ink something of mine, because
that would be cool.
I would love that.
Yeah, yeah. That would be awesome. Now, I'm a big fan of your inking style, and I've always tried to ink my own work, and I'll mm-hmm. be honest here, I think my inking stinks.
Well, I wouldn't agree.
I've watched you a few times while you're working. It's just amazing to me how effortless it seems to be for you to just, you know, to know where to draw the line, or where to fill in with blacks and all that. And I always wonder what your approach was with inking, because I think it's becoming a lost art with all the digital work that's being done lately.
Yeah.
And I think inking is such a... There's so much more to inking than just tracing or filling in spots.
Oh, yeah. Well, a lot of it has happened sort of through osmosis, because I wouldn't ink the storyboards in a comics fashion with mm-hmm. a brush or anything, but I use these brush pens mm-hmm. for most of the storyboard work I did, at least up until recently, when mm-hmm. people want less finished pencil work. And so just the repetition of drawing that much work. I mean, I just do reams and reams of drawings in storyboards, mm-hmm. and even if they're not great drawings, it's still making you proficient with putting that ink on the paper. And so when I thought about doing comics again, and Karina, my wife, had a story for this book Heathen Town that I was finishing up on Spider-Man 3. I'd been on the movie for 2 years. I was very burnt out.
That was a long time, 2 years.
It was a really long time. That was a long time out of my life. And at the end of it, I was thinking, I'd like to do something different, you know, and I would like to, I'd like to try to do a comic. And she had that story, and I was just like, you know what, I'm just going to draw this graphic novel. And so, and I had always thought that I wouldn't be able to ink my own stuff because it wouldn't be slick enough for people to accept. Mm-hmm. As, but then, you know, I'm looking around and, you know, there's, and people like, you know, Michael Lark and Stefano Guadiano. I don't know how to say his last name. Yeah, I just met him at Emerald City, but yeah, I wasn't sure how to say his last name. But the kind of stuff they were doing, and some other people. Like, I mean, I it wasn't like I was looking at their work as inspiration for my work, but I was looking around and going, well, some people can do sloppier looking stuff and more. You know, and less slick, perfect stuff, and get away with it, and it's getting published. So I'm just gonna ink this, and if it isn't perfect, whatever. I'm just gonna go for it. You know, so I did with that. I don't, you know, that book is still a very, you know, that is literally, you know, the first page of that of Heathentown is the first comic page I'd drawn in 10 years. So, you know, so it, you know, that stuff, it's a little rough and I'm figuring it out as I go. But as I did the book, I started to feel like I was a lot more confident with it. And I was still inking that with a brush pen, cause I was comfortable with it. And then that started feeling limited. Then when I started getting offers for work at Marvel, I started feeling like, well, this isn't, you know, I'm not getting everything that I could out of the inks. And so I just started using a brush. I'd never inked anything with a brush in my life. And I never felt like, and it always seemed like some intimidating thing, but I'm always kind of willing to fail at stuff. So I was just willing to give it a shot, you know? And so I just started doing it, started doing some dry brush stuff and using it for some effects. And I've gotten looser and looser and sloppier as I've gone. But, you know, but I still like that. And I like the energy of it. And I feel like it's more important to have that energy in the work than it is to have it look technically perfect.
Oh yeah, I agree.
And I remember it was on Reign of Fire, actually. There were me and like several other storyboard artists at the very beginning, and Bernie Wrightson was one of the other storyboard artists who was working on it. Yeah, and so which was very intimidating the first day going on to that show, and checking in, and I was late because I'm always late, and so everybody else was already there, and everybody else had already signed in. I'm looking down the list of names of, you know, other storyboard artists I know and everything, and like, wait, Bernie Wrightson is working on this? Like, how am I gonna look good next to Bernie Wrightson? But Bernie was like the greatest guy in the world, and he was like, you know, I really think that under almost every circumstance, an artist should ink their own stuff, because it may not be perfect, but it looks individual, and it has an energy to it. And I really think that he's right. I mean, I know that there are circumstances where it's interesting when another inker inks an artist, and I think that's great, and I'm not against that in any way. But I think that the energy comes from you just putting everything on the page yourself.
All right.
Wait, did I answer the question? What was the question?
No, you did good. I really like that. Yeah, inking is just phenomenal. I think your inking's great. So whenever someone else inks your stuff, I tend to notice because it looks different. Yeah. Then I saw the credits. Like, Tom Palmer.
Yeah. I mean, which is, it's certainly interesting to see that, you know? And I mean, and I personally have been, I've only done two of them, but recently, I inked a Gene Colan sketch.
It's been going around the internet now, and you and a bunch of other people have been inking it, and it's
exactly. Cool. Well, it was my idea in the first place. It wasn't Andy Park's idea. He's constantly trying to take credit for it, but I'm just looking around at stuff and feeling a little frustrated with the work, you know, just my ability to draw and thinking, wow, it would be really interesting to just try to ink somebody else's stuff. And then I was like, well, who's the hardest guy to ink? And it's probably Gene Colan. Oh, so like, or at least the person that most people have had the most trouble with. And I was just like, you know, I think I'd like to try to do this because it would challenge me And, you know, and my kind of preconceived ideas about how I ink stuff, if I was trying to interpret his stuff. And so I did that. I was the first guy to do it. And and then a lot of other people did it, which is great, which was actually really awesome. And then like Kevin Mellon put them all together on a blog. And I thought it was really cool to see everybody's different interpretations of it. And I loved inking that. I felt like it was... It just made so much sense to me, and I wish that I could go back in time and like ink an issue of a Gene Colan book. It would be the greatest thing in the world. But so like I've done that, and I like did a Ramona Fraiden piece, and I think there's a Dave Stevens one that I'm gonna try to do next time I have an opportunity. Hopefully other people will join in on it, but I don't, you know, I'm not interested in having some formal group of people to that I'll do this. Just anybody should be able to do it. But I think it's a really, really good exercise. I mean, especially trying people who are really good, you know, like trying to play on a level that, you know, is way beyond you is always a good learning experience, you know?
That's great. You know, so speaking of your, you know, we're kind of on your, more in your current work. You've been working on the Hulk for quite some time now, and with Jeff Parker. And yeah. You and Jeff have been working together for quite some time, too, because you guys started working together during Agents of Atlas. Mm-hmm. Since you guys kind of how long did it take for you guys to actually gel as a, you know, as collaborators, and how was that? How's that process like getting into, you know, because you're working with this guy for the first time, and right. A lot of people get to really know their collaborators over the time that they work together. I was always wondering how long it'd take for you guys to really gel as a collaboration, I guess.
Well, I think that it was pretty easy, you know? I mean, I think that like we just kind of fit together sensibility-wise enough. I mean, he's got like a set of stuff that he's interested in, a certain sensibility that he's interested in, that doesn't exactly match with mine. And I have stuff that, you know, he's not exactly into, but the where that overlaps is pretty good, you know? And the very first thing we did together was actually a Hulk one shot, Hulk and Hulk Frankenstein one shot. So like it was, you know, it was already something that was, it was the 70s Marvel Frankenstein, you know, and it was already something that I was just like born to draw, right? You know, because like it's got castles and it's got, you know, like old fashioned looking lab equipment and helicopters and explosions and all the stuff, you know, and a creepy looking Frankenstein and all the stuff that I felt like drawing that book was the easiest thing I've ever done. You know, that was like, it was basically the first thing I did for Marvel. And it was just like, drawing that book was like breathing, you know? So like so the very first project was something that, you know, both of us were pretty into and, you know, and just worked, you know? So then after that, I did those Agents of Atlas backup, well, not backups, but like the half of the half of the issue would be set in the past and I would draw the part in the past. Mm-hmm. And I was doing that at the same time as I was still storyboarding full time. So, you know, and I was very tentative about, I mean, I didn't seek out work from Marvel. I had done Heathentown and I had done, just sort of as a lark, I did this book from Ape, a one issue Black Coat one shot, which was something that it was a series that Francesco Francavilla had drawn the first series of, and then Ben Licious had wanted to put out something else before, you know, so that people wouldn't forget about the book before the next one came out, and so I just did that as a sort of freelance thing because it sounded cool and so I don't know if I don't know exactly who saw it. Somebody, Mark Panisha or Jeff or somebody saw some of that stuff, and they just called me up and offered me something. And I was kind of, I mean, I was a full-time storyboard artist. I wanted to do creator-owned stuff, but I didn't intend to become like a full-time Marvel freelancer again. So so I sort of took things very, you know, I did those kind of half issues of Atlas while I was still working on a movie, and I didn't take everything that they offered me because I was like too busy. But I just really liked it. I just liked the experience of drawing comics. I liked not leaving the house. I liked, just being able to like set my own timetable and as far as when I work. And it was really, really appealing doing that work. And so as we moved into that through the Atlas stuff, it really didn't ever feel like there was a time where Jeff and I weren't connecting on it. It was always pretty much from the start. It worked out really well. Yeah,
that's cool because there are some people who work together and just takes a while for them to really get into each other and really function properly as a creative team.
Right.
But before you went to Marvel, you mentioned Heathen Town, which is the graphic novel you did with Karina Bechko, your wife. And when I first saw that book, it was really cool little horror story. And then I kind of associate your stuff to, that type of genre. And I always wondered if you ever revisit that, like doing more horror work or just...
I would love to do more horror work. I'd love to do, I'd love to do something that was a sort of noirish crime thing. I would love to do another horror book. I just like to do more creator-owned stuff in general, which was always my intention coming back to comics.
You're actually going to be able to do that again because you have a new book coming out soon. I don't know, and it's called Station to Station.
Yes, it's not coming out that soon, but we are working on it.
Yeah, it's coming soon.
I'm going to finish up. I agreed to do a year run on the Hulk, which I'm finishing up this summer, and so I'm going to take as much time off as I can from both movies and comics to just focus on finishing up Station to Station as much as possible. And it's cool because, we had, I did an interview at CBR and I just threw some of the preview pages in there, just for the hell of it. And we just got an amazingly positive response from them.
They are gorgeous, man. They're some of the most amazing pages I've seen. Like the first page with the this floating creature with all the dinosaurs. It's just it looks like something out of an old EC book.
It's certainly it's a crazy sci-fi genre thing. It's also a very character oriented book, but it's definitely a genre book. It's definitely a fast-paced book with a lot of big visuals in it. And I think it's going to be really, really fun, and I can't wait to actually get through the rest of the pages and set up a deal to get it published and just have the satisfaction of doing another creator owned book.
Now, who's coloring this book?
Oh, I colored those pages.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know you colored. That's really good. I really like the palette.
Thanks. I'm not sure whether I'll be able to color the whole thing myself because just time constraints. It really takes me long. It probably takes me longer to color a page than it does to draw it in the first place. I'm pretty fast at drawing and not quite as fast at coloring. So it may come down to me, either having someone assist me on the coloring or have someone else do it basically in the style that I've set up. Mm-hmm. But ideally for me, I would do absolutely everything on the book so that it would, so that it would be all
yours. It's completely yours.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
If I could only get around to doing having somebody make a font out of my lettering, then everything would be perfect.
that'd be cool. A lot of artists do that now anyway.
I know. Me being able to accomplish something like that is another story. I'm always so crazy busy. Right now I'm working on a movie. I'm storyboarding a movie full time and doing Hulk full time. So I just don't sleep. You know, I'm literally working every waking moment, at least until the end of this month.
Well, you know, I mean, it's all going to pay off in the end, though, and hopefully we get to that point where we'll. How many pages do you envision this you know, station?
It should be about 160.
Wow,
so
that's a lot.
That's yeah. I mean, because Heathen Town was 80, so but you know, if I'm not doing anything else, and my plan is to just. At least set aside a couple of months at least. If I'm only working on one thing, I can crank out like 2 pages a day. So it's doable. Mm-hmm. That's how I did Heathen Town. I just went to work every day and drew 2 pages every day.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm looking forward to when that to Station to Station when it finally comes out.
Thanks.
I'm really excited just by seeing those pages. I think No, it's always fun to. I mean, you're working, you know, with your wife on the story, and it must be a lot of fun to just do that, you know.
We're writing this one together. Corinne is writing other freelance stuff right now that I can't talk about because it's not announced
yet.
That's
cool. Good for her.
Which is very good. Mm-hmm. And we both want to do a lot more comics.
All right, that's great. I'm looking forward to more comics from you guys. At this point, we'll jump into some listener questions.
Sure.
And first question is from from a fellow named Jurassic Alien, and his question is: what is the one character you have yet to draw into a book, but would love to do so? And as a Twin Peaks fan, what did you think of the Psycho homage?
Okay, I'll take those two. It's the first question. There are tons of characters that I would like to draw that I haven't gotten a chance to. I mean, basically all of the characters at DC that I'm a fan of, mm-hmm. you know, I haven't got a chance to draw. But I probably wouldn't anyway. You know, we talked about a couple of those. I'd also love to draw Green Arrow. All of these are predicated on there actually being a decent story that I would want to do. Mm-hmm. But I would love to draw Green Arrow and I would love to draw Batman. Mm-hmm. I'm not even the hugest Batman fan, but I have been... but I've loved drawing him. I've drawn some sketches of him. I've drawn him a lot lately for other reasons. And I would love to be able to draw him in comics. There's other stuff at Marvel I'd like to draw, but probably no one else actually wants to see it. I would like to do a Machine Man book.
Oh, wow.
Or I would like to draw maybe the Golden Age Vision. But there's also other stuff like Alpha Flight or many other C&D level things that nobody else.
Everyone seems to love Alpha Flight, and you know, I personally just don't get it. I mean, the early Burn stuff was pretty cool, and every time they'd show up in X-Men was always fun, but I was never into those characters. But you know.
I think that it was just a certain time. I mean, I don't know if are you too young to have been reading the stuff when it was coming out?
I've read some of the stuff when it was coming out.
But because I think it was just a certain zeitgeist about that series and, you know, and sort of the twists in it and the impact that it had and, you know, right at that point in time so that most everybody who's my age, mm-hmm. you know, has really fond feelings for that book. But you know, and also Spider-Man is obviously a not so obscure character that I would love to draw at Marvel. I hope that I'm able to do, you know, to do at least, you know, one, cool Spider-Man story there. Cause I've really enjoyed drawing the character, the chances I've gotten to draw him. And I would love to have the chance to draw a full book.
Yeah, I'd love to see you do Spidey as well. And then you mentioned Batman. I think your style suits Batman perfectly, and Green Arrow as well.
Yeah. I think that would be, you know, and it's so – I've felt so comfortable drawing Batman that and I would love to be able to do a really noirish book. So I think those things would fit together really well.
Oh, yeah. I would buy that book.
So I have to answer the Twin Peaks question. Yeah. I thought that the episode of Psych – was cool. It was fun that they, you know, that they were making all the references, all the Twin Peaks references. But, you know, I mean, it was, it's just a novelty, you know. It was an amusing novelty that, you know, that they would have the characters on there and that they would, you know, that they would make a lot of references to it. But, it's not the world of Twin Peaks. It's not the, you know, it's not the atmosphere of Twin Peaks, which is what I love so much.
Okay. The next question is from Cameron Hathaway, who has his own podcast, Cammy's Comic Corner.
Oh, sure.
And his question is, you've illustrated several characters for the weekly SketchUps. Which characters would you enjoy working on for 12 issues? I guess you kind of answered that already. He would love to see you work on the Lobster Johnson graphic novel.
Yeah, I would like to. I mean, it would be fun to draw one of those Mike Mignola verse, whatever you call that, books, to draw a BPRD or something like that. I think that would be a lot of fun.
And Tom Fowler asks,
uh-oh.
Your plane goes down in the Andes. The plane's cargo of Brazilian soccer players, lettuce, and root vegetables have all been burned to a crisp. Left alive are you, Parker, and Christopher Nolan. Who will you eat first?
Let's see. I think Parker, because I feel like Parker does have a boat. And so maybe he would have boating knowledge that would somehow get us out of this situation. But we're stuck in the Andes, so that doesn't really matter. I feel like Christopher Nolan is a gajillionaire, and one of the most serious paranoid men I've ever met. Even though I get along with him very well, and I like working with him, so I would expect that Christopher Nolan will have a contingency plan for this. And there probably are already people on the way who will some sort of like SAS guys or some, you know, there's some elaborate contingency plan that Christopher Nolan has already set up for this kind of situation that will get us out of it. And I feel like if we ate Christopher Nolan, then those guys would just show up and go, fuck off. You didn't pay for us. You know, we're not saving you. So I think that we'd have to get along eating Parker along the way. This is all also based on the fact that I'm a vegetarian and Tom finds that unappealing. So that's why he's asking this.
He actually included a note here that if it helps expedite the answer, both Parker and Nolan have been magically transformed into Brussels sprouts by the crash.
Oh, well, there you go. They're definitely Parker.
And another question I have is from Dave Cummings, and he was curious about your influences, and yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, who are your main influences as far as your comic art goes?
I feel like my influences is sort of are a lot different now than they were when I was younger, but I'm sure that's true of a lot of people. Mm-hmm. My biggest influences are Gene Colan and Zaffino.
I can definitely see some Zaffino in your work.
Yeah, I mean, particularly the inking and stuff. I love how far he goes with being expressive with the inks. I wish that I could go a tenth that far. And early comic strip artist Noel Sickles is huge. He drew the Scorzi Smith strip, and he was sort of a contemporary of Milton Caniff. I think that if anybody looked at my inking style, they could see where I'm getting a certain amount of it from him. And also Bruno Premiani, who drew the 60s Doom Patrol, who probably you can't so much see the influence of his stuff on mine, but I love his stuff as much as anybody. And certainly there's Alex Toth, who I'm a huge fan of, but so is everybody. So saying that doesn't have the level of impact.
Well, this is the first I've heard of Noel Sickles and Bruno Premiani, so I'll definitely be looking at their stuff.
Gotta go look at stuff. Go pick up the 60s Doom Patrol Essentials, or whatever they're called from DC. Showcase,
yes.
Yeah, and it's his draftsmanship and his line work are amazing. I love the way he draws animals. He's one of those guys that I'm dying to buy an original page, mm-hmm. and I haven't been able to do it yet. I can't afford it, except that like 10 years ago I saw those pages on the market, mm-hmm. and they were about maybe a quarter of the price that they are now, which is ridiculous. He didn't do that much work. It was mainly for the Doom Patrol at DC, and he did some Sea Devils, and a couple other little things, and some inking, some other people. But so there's not a lot of his work out there, and it's Silver Age work at that. So it's very, very expensive. But I would kill to have a Bruno Premiani. Doom, this is there are many artists that apparently I will kill for some of their art. But to have a Bruno Premiani page from the Doom Patrol with some kind of animal on it. That's what I would like to have. I have some Noel, I have a Noel Sickles page, and I have Gene Colan Tomb of Dracula page, and I desperately need a Zaffino page, and I need a Bruno Premiani page, and so that means two people are going to get killed so that I can open pages.
Yeah, hopefully it's not. I'm a little scared right now.
I don't know if it works that way, though. I don't know the mechanics of it. I don't know if you kill somebody, they just give you the piece of original art that you'd like. I don't know. It may not work out that way. I may just have to buy them. So.
Yeah, the whole original art market right now is kind of scary to me because of how much pieces are going for lately.
Yes. Yeah.
And I've always, I'm a collector myself. I mostly pick up, commissions of characters I like.
Yeah.
And I always thought it's just ridiculous how much. I certainly believe that everyone's pretty much worth whatever they're charging, but sometimes it just goes to a point where, man, it's getting a lot of money.
For a lot of these, though, you're not, if you're buying it from the artist, mm-hmm. then that's great, but if you're buying it from a dealer who's kind of artificially inflated the price because of the market, then, that's not that cool, I mean, that's a different thing entirely.
Yeah.
But whatever. Although, I'm not talking about my art dealer, Cadence Comic Art, who does a fantastic job. And it's very different representing artists who are alive and have input in the, in the pricing and in the whole thing. I mean, that's a guy that I've chosen. That's not just some guy who has bought a page, 40 years later after many people have owned it, and is turning it around.
So at this point, Gabe, where can people find you online?
The best way to find me online is to just follow me on Twitter, because that's where I, where I post most everything, related to me, so it's just my name, Gabriel Hardman, on Twitter.
Okay. And we will link that at the over at the show notes. And of course you're currently working on Hulk, at least for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. I'll have done 12 issues of it. Which I think is a pretty respectable run, considering the way that things go these days.
Yeah, and you've done every issue, all 12 issues. It's not
fill-ins, except for the Tom Palmer inking the one. It's been all me. I mean, there have been other issues are coming out, but it's because they've increased the number of issues in the year that they're putting out for Hulk. It's not that there are fill-in issues. So I mean, there was an Ed McGuinness issue, but that came out 2 weeks after the previous one, and another one comes out a couple weeks after that. There's just more issues of Hulk coming out. So I agreed to do it for a year, and I've done the 12 issues, in that year.
Excellent. So once again, Gabe, thanks for stopping by. And of course I will link to not only your Twitter, but to your art dealer.
Yeah.
So they can purchase some original Gabriel Hardman pages.
That'd be great.
And again, thank you for coming on. It was fun talking to you, man. It's fun to really learn all this stuff about the two industries and just the experience of getting into comics back in the 90s.
Cool. Yeah. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, we'll have you on again. Maybe when your Hulk run ends, or maybe when Station to Station finally comes out.
That would be great.
And one last thing. I'm sorry. Hidden Town is still in print, right? It's still.
Yes, it is. Second printing of it came out, so it's available through Amazon and I think DCBS and stock trades. I mean, and And so it's definitely still available. Yeah, we did a second printing only a few months ago.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, I remember hearing about that. I want to make sure people were aware of that book because it is a great book. It's a great horror book. It's called Heathentown. Look for it on Amazon and Instant.
Oh, and also yes. It very soon should be available through the Comixology app.
Awesome. All right. Well, again, thank you. And thanks again for coming on. And we look forward to having you again next time.
Absolutely. I look forward to it.
All right.
Selling black and white lines, and that it knows your whole